I don't necessarily want to say it's a positive, but it is kind of like a, it's interesting how it's like a protective symptom of the underground like criminal environment, because they're effectively businesses just like everybody else, right?
Right.
They're just businesses for illegal activity, and so they want a level of calm and normalcy like everybody else.
They need
So when all the
predictability, right? It's like any other market, right? If markets like predictability, if you can stabilize a market, you know what your inputs are, what your outputs are over time, the longer, you're going to be more successful, right? Like that's just the way it is. They want some sort of like regular heartbeat as like, oh, hey, this is our market. This is the ebbs and flows. We know what it does. And when you start screwing around with that, you mess up with, you mess with their business. You mess with their families, their lives, and all those other things. And the thing is like not all gangs are bad, right? Like, some people could call Bitcoin veterans a gang. I mean, we're a bunch of, dangerous individuals who are armed to the teeth that want to, take over the world and leave everybody alone. But at the same time, it's one of those things where, some of these gangs out there are probably fairly similar. There's legal status in terms of, where they are in terms of citizens and all that fun stuff. But, I'll tell you right now, for the life of me, like I'm with you. I think those kind of things are more of a positive than they are a negative. Where, and for everybody that's just tuning in, we're talking about some of the riots that are going on out in California, where a few of the gangs have been like, look, this is our hood, and if you come out here and you do anything, we're gonna end your protest.
You're not gonna have a good time. And we're gonna turn it into a public display so that more people understand that if they challenge us, they're also not gonna have a good time. It's like it's reminiscent of how long ago was it? It was pretty recent, where was it ISIS or Al Qaeda or somebody had threatened that they were gonna bring the fight to the US land, US shores, and the mafia in New York was like, you could try. If you bring it here, like, we're gonna be standing shoulder to shoulder with the military and the law enforcement. Like, we're not having it.
Yeah, the American network effect at some point starts to kick in, right? And people in communities, boroughs, whatever townships, they start going, like, if this leaks out of this particular, corporate zone or whatever it is, like, okay. One of the things that I will give some of the protesters some credit for is and I say some of them, like the original day, right, is they were actually going after the government, right? Like this wasn't your normal, go after Apple and go after, since then there are looters that have kind of kicked in, like, hey, there's protests and then there's barbecues going on and everything else. We might as well go down and get some new iPhones and iPads and whatever else we want and start trashing stores. But that kind of came later. Like the first initial wave, man, like these guys, I mean, it's a very scary scene. Like for anybody that hasn't seen some of the stuff, I don't, if you're on X, you've seen it. I mean, cops were driving on the interstate and getting smashed by giant bricks and rocks in their cruisers. I mean, did you see that whole scene unfolding like underneath a bridge and like an overpass
I didn't
there?
see that one. I saw a brief what looked like a pretty nasty aftermath of it. The main one I saw was the of the one guy that was just repeatedly throwing rocks into windshields as they were driving right by him.
Yeah, and apparently they've at least said that they've caught that guy, which it didn't take him what 72 hours to catch that guy. I mean,
Not even.
he had a
'Cause
motorcycle.
I think that was like Sunday and it's
Yeah,
Tuesday, so.
apparently not a great guy either. He's been arrested something like 14 different times. Lots of
Oh,
yeah,
weird.
lots of violence and drug charges and all that fun stuff. But yeah, I know, shocker, right? Like, I mean, that guy's making all the right decisions. Like, even if you hate the feds and all that, and a lot of us do, right? But there's a very fine line between hating the feds and going out in a motorcade and starting to find every rock that you can pick up and throw against their windshield. It's insane.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the difference between hating feds and doing what you can to maximize your privacy and your anonymity. And then there's a completely different thing where you're going out of your way to paint a target on your back and act in a way of where it's just drawing attention to you and you're really not accomplishing anything. So like dropping rocks on cruisers as they're going by and responding to events is like, you're putting yourself in, not in front of a steamroller, but you're putting yourself in front of a effectively like an M1A1 Abrams. Like the steamroller goes like 2 miles an hour. The Abrams can go 75 and it's got like weaponry attached to it. Like, you know, pick your battles.
Yeah. Not a very good choice. Not to mention, I mean, I'm not saying that there's never a time for revolution, right? Like, and obviously here at Bitcoin Veterans, we understand that there's a different set of rules in terms of like, there's an easier way to do this. Like there's a financial way to do this.
And, morally justified way of doing this too.
Right. And what they want you to do right now is participate in the violence. And that's the thing that gets me is like, they're literally like, they're just, you know, out there saber rattling, trying to get as many people fomented to the point where they make dumb decisions, irrational decisions, just totally emotional decisions to come out and get involved in violence, like to grow the violence, to grow divides, to start to harness that, because that's what you have in order to turn this into a revolution or a civil war, which I think is actually the goal.
Yeah. Well, they picked a really stupid hill to die on too.
Like who's they and what hill?
The rioters, like in the groups that are trying to foment this right now. It's like you guys really the topic is removing the people from the country that weren't supposed to be here in the first place. That's the hill you want to die on. It's not how banking is destroying America. It's not how Congress's constant like funding of deficit spending is also destroying America. It's not like the military industrial complex. It's not all the fraud in the healthcare, like health insurance and all the insurance like systems. It's not because of that. It's because of trying to remove the upwards of 20 million people that are undocumented that aren't supposed to be here in the first place.
Right.
Because the immigrants that came here legally, like they're on the side of law enforcement. They're like, yeah, they shouldn't be here because they're breaking the system that we benefited from. And they're like, one of my favorite videos was a Hispanic gentleman who it circulated on Twitter aggressively. He's like, let me get this straight. You're not supposed to be here. You're here illegally. You don't want to leave, but you're hoisting the flag of the country you fled from that you don't want to go back to. And you're mad that the place that you don't want to leave is not more like the place that you don't want to go back to. So like make this make sense. Like, how is this not stupid?
Yeah. You can't make it make sense. The side of this that I really, you know, I come down on more than anything is just all this tough talk banter from non-frontline players.
Yeah.
God, it's laughable. It's like, guys, you literally had the past 20 plus years. If you were really a badass, you probably signed up maybe to the Marine Corps, the Army, some sort of special operations group within the military somewhere. Maybe you got involved in, I don't know, something like HRT in the FBI or something, right? Like if you were really that guy that, you know, was such a badass. But there are literally so many people out there, and I, you know, Charlie Kirk being one of the worst offenders in all of this kind of stuff, right? Where it's just fomenting this divide and conquer type of mentality, like police state, and he's just cheering it on. You know, those kind of guys, shut the fuck up. Just shut the fuck up for as long as this is going on. If you literally have no skin in that game, then just back off and let the adults handle this, because what I see across the board, especially from guys like, you know, Bitcoin veterans and other veterans that are out there, especially the guys that have been downrange, is like, guys, you have no idea what you're trying to get yourself into. You have no idea the tough talk and trash talk and all this other bullshit that you're spewing into the universe right now. It's like, this isn't helping things. You're not going to scare off or change minds or any of those things. Like, there are people who have their mindsets, good, bad, or indifferent. If they're for the state, if they're against the state, if they're for legal immigration or for illegal immigration, it doesn't matter. Like, you're not changing anybody's minds at this point. Yeah. And so it's either you're either going to show up and learn what warfare is about firsthand, or you're not. And if you're not, then, man, definitely don't add to the flame. There's nothing worse than bitches out there that will fan the flames of engagements that are not willing to fight them.
Yeah. Well, and I think the what you effectively described was that you have a confined space that the balances of power are not changing, and the people like the Charlie Kirks are just effectively, there's already gas vapor in the room. It's just waiting for the right spark to kick off the chain reaction. And the guys like Charlie Kirk and other conservative freaking influencers like Laura Loomer, are just like, what they're doing is just injecting more and more gas vapor into the confined space and making it a more and more dangerous environment. Like, it's,
yeah.
It just cracks me up how they think that they're doing some sort of good. Well, and then they're coming out and like, Laura Loomer disgusts me.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Can we talk about that dude for a second?
Well, the fact that she's calling for Palantir to be deployed against domestic populations in the U.S. Like, well, she has no idea what she's calling for.
She's also calling for the Palestinian Shema, which they don't call it a Shema in Palestine. I don't know what they call it. But basically, you know, the checkered head wrap, right? Is what she's literally calling for that to be illegal. And
I'm gonna start wearing mine around every day now.
Yeah.
At least around the neck, not on the head though.
But here's the thing, is like, all right, Laura, you know, if that's number one on the can't wear hat list, what do you think number two is gonna be for most Americans? It's going to be tiny little hats called yarmulkes, right? Like, at some point, you know, all right, you get rid of all the Palestinians, Laura, in your perfect world. You know, the Americans are still sitting here and turning faster than ever on what the Israelis are doing, right? So, you know, if in the chronological step of things.
Except for Tim Pool.
Yeah. Well, oh, you want to wear those little hats around? Like, if you're going to do it to them, expect the next administration to do it to you.
Yeah. Well, and like, it just goes to show how many of these individuals are just, I've said it before, rabid goldfish. Like, they don't understand what it is they're chasing, or like what the knock-on effects are of, like, even if they were to grab whatever it is that they're chasing, they don't know what they're going to do with it once they get there. So it's, it's just like, it's almost like peak low IQ. It sounds very oxymoronic, but like, it feels like we're, I hope we're approaching a crescendo of stupidity, but I don't know. I doubt it at the same time.
Yeah. I've told people, you know, that are close to me, is get some extra food, get some batteries, shore up on some supplies, because this is going to be the summer of love. And I hope to be wrong about that. I don't think I'm going to be. I think we're just starting to see some of the machinations of extremely diabolical and evil people come to fruition now, and not, you know, all by design. You know, when you're thinking about going down to any of these events and being part of any of this kind of stuff, like, you know, Captain Dipshit here that's waving a Mexican flag on a burned out Waymo, you know, understand that Palantir is just going mainstream now, and I'm not sure, you know, exactly why they want to show it, or maybe they are showing it now. It's just a shit, hey, this is what we can do, this is what we've got. And but understand, if you've got a smartphone or smart device in your possession, they're tracking everything you're doing. They're tracking everybody you're interfacing with. If you're getting numbers, they know those numbers are being swapped. If you are swapping text messages, they know that's happening. They can see who you're palling around with. So if you look at a data map of where you are and where other people are in relation to you, and you're palling around with people, like moving around, they can see how you're moving around and who you're moving around with, down to almost the second. So
yeah,
if you think you're going to just show up at one of these and not be known because you think you have a face mask on, man, you're so wrong. Maybe you missed January 6th. Like, this is the other side of the coin. Is like, anybody that's there, anybody that's pinging towers, man, you've got serialized gear on your body that is literally emitting and receiving transmissions, and that is all.
They're also recording the audio too.
Of course they are. Yeah.
You know, another funny personality with this whole thing is, did you see that? A former, was she a Full House actress? She's been identified as partaking in this. It's
like, is that right?
What's up, Bitcoin Beacon? Yeah, I can't remember her name. It was some little blonde thing, but, even with like her hat and her bionic mask on and like face mask on, like the camera person still identified who she was. It's like, dude, like, and like that tweet that you put up from Tony Saruga. Mm-hmm. If the audience didn't read it, he stated that his firm had tracked like over 300 devices of people in these riots, and they're coming from $10 million plus residences in this SoCal area. So it's like they're also starting to like be able to identify like where these people are being equipped from and organized from. So, and then you're gonna watch it. It's gonna trace right back to celebrities if they put that stuff public. And I think they should put it public, but they won't, because they're going to use it as probably political and blackmail, like, information in order to get what they want out of them.
Yeah. And that's the state of affairs, isn't it? I mean, that's how whoever's in charge right now rules is, you know, you look at this ridiculous decaying empire that's imploding right now. They rule through subversion. They rule through blackmail. Yeah. And anybody that they can use leverage on, whether it's, you know, avoiding a prison sentence or, you know, whatever the case is, they say, hey, you can either do this for us or you can go to prison. And, you know, the only way out of that is keeping your nose extremely clean, right? Is always being on record calling for peace, not meeting with, you know, secret FBI informants or anything like that, where, you know, they're trying to give you, you know, drugs or bombs or any of that kind of stuff to go do ill will to people. Like, this whole system is built on a decaying blackmail system. And I think a lot of this actually spawns from some of, you know, what we know to be true, right? It's like, Trump's been in office a little over 140 days now. There's absolutely been zero arrest of the Epstein client list, zero yep. arrest of any major government officials, zero arrest of any, you know, any of the bureaucrats. When I think about the problems with America, you know, you could sit here in LA, Houston, where else did you say in California was starting to pop up?
Well, there's what was it? Santa Fe? Santa Ana. There's Santa Ana. I don't know where that is in relation to Los Angeles. It's probably just another suburb, like province. Right. But so like Seattle was part of it. Austin was part of it, in Dallas. Those are the ones that I know of. What's up, man? And I mentioned it in our spaces this morning, but so for those that are in the audience, I apologize. I'm going to repeat it again, but it's important to understand that like a lot of these protests have been scheduled and have been getting organized, ahead of time. So like, I would expect more violence to spread tonight, and then there will be more protests that are in bigger cities, farther east in the country, and then you'll probably watch them like spring up in more activity and violence in the night as they follow the protests. It's guaranteed to come to a crescendo either the night before or the night of the parade this Saturday. So.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to stop there though. You know what a dying empire needs is exactly what they're fomenting, and that's war, right? Like they need war. The American people have not been, you know, behind Ukraine. They haven't been behind the Israeli genocide, and that really now kind of is turning onto them. And I know, you know, from our time in service and even after service, you know, I held a top secret clearance for a long time. What they always talked about was peer to peer or near peer. And I always found that fascinating, right? Is like, we have literal contingencies for wars with China, wars with Russia, and all yeah. those things, right? Like that I'm not saying that they figured it out. It's an ever evolving process. And, you know, the G7 usually runs that kind of thing. So when the evolution came in and they started talking about near peer or peer to peer, that was always to me, like, this was always meant for revolution inside the United States, right? Like that's what peer to peer and near peer means. Is
it's all test bed.
Yeah, exactly. They know it's coming. They know that the spawn of this is because their failing currency is leaving more and more dejected, people more and more desperate. And at a certain point, you know, when other countries see the same thing and they're done dealing with your bullshit, they're done dealing with your wars, they're done dealing with your NGOs, you know, that are really just masquerading around intelligence services. Like, the entire world's just fatigued. They're fatigued of this entire regime. And I get it. It's like, guys, I understand, but this is exactly where they want you. They want you to be violent, and they want you to, you know, come to these things. They need war right now so that they can turn on the money printer and they can start paying themselves so that they can continue to, you know, do what they've always done. And that's
establish security.
Right. And that's that's basically slaughtering men, women, and children for the sake of, I don't know, the empire. I don't know how else to say that. It's really kind of the sad situation that we're in. The best thing you can do is not give into it, not be part of it, and totally, you know, totally separate yourself and anybody you can from it.
Yeah, no, like, there's also, I mean, that's already bad enough, but I think people also need to consider that there are other potentialities that fall downstream from that. If the people were to play into this hand and things got out of hand to the point of where, say, there was an uprising or a civil war or a bifurcation or Balkanization, whatever. If we didn't get a wrangling on it, there's also a foreseeable future of where the EU and the UN and NATO and, like, and even China and the rest of the world, like, they look at the US and they're like, hey, the US is, like, we were all kind of complaining about, like, the hegemonic order, but they're also a very important linchpin in the global economy. Mm-hmm. So we need to send in peacekeepers and establish security there, and we will like establish a like protectorate over the United States, and it'll be somebody like a combination of China and London or something like that. That's maintaining order over that. And like, that's not an environment any of us want to be in.
Right? I don't think it's an environment most Americans would put up with either. Right.
No.
And that, I think that's one of the other things is if there's enough violence here, I think you're exactly right. I think the rest of the world says, well, or it, let's just say, I say the rest of the world, the players that be in the rest of the world that have the power and the money and the resources to move a quote unquote peace force into America would jump at that opportunity, right?
Oh, yeah.
If there's a foothold to be had, there's a opportunity that they would try to do something like that. And all that does is, it's like, every time you bring in a superior force, like they're doing now with the Marine Corps, like, all you're doing is upping the odds that something goes sideways and then it shifts in a escalation instead of a de-escalation way. You know,
things always go sideways in those environments.
Right. I mean, you look at when they sacrifice the Marines in Lebanon, you know, in Beirut, like that, I guarantee you from everything that I've read and heard and studied, I think those Marines were literally slaughtered to bring about change, right? Like, I think they were pawns in the game and they were slaughtered, right there on the spot. And, you know, we go down conspiracy rabbit holes and everything. I think that was a clear signal that we were not supposed to be doing what we were doing. They slaughtered those guys, and it turned the entire situation in the 1980s from where we were not as in bed with the Israelis as we are today, right? Like, and so you start to see, you start bringing in guys like this. Let's just say, you know, wherever these Marines are being, you know, taken to, whether it's their barracks or, you know, whatever their accommodation. I think
they're around the Reagan building, yeah. I believe. S2 Underground has been documenting it pretty well.
If they're in a place and that place gets either bombed or torched or Marines die, you're looking at further escalation. And further escalation in this type of city with these type of people is only going to ratchet up, right? Like California thinks they got rid of all the guns. You're going to find out how many guns are still in Southern California very quick if things like this go sideways. Because if I know who Marines are, and I do, especially the guys from 2-7 out in damn 29 Palms, right? Like you've seen videos going around about this kind of stuff, I imagine. If you don't know where 29 Palms is, it is the worst duty station in the Marine Corps. It is east of Joshua Tree in the middle of the desert where all your degens get to go for a while. They paint rocks in 115 degree heat. They hump hills and they hate their life. And, you know, having a chance to go to LA to possibly prove themselves against, you know, people who they're being told, right? Like, then that's what happens is they're being isolated in this at this point. They've gone into ISO prep. Now the warning order and the frag order has probably been issued, and these guys are about to go out. And dude, you give these guys live rounds in a situation like this, and you know, somebody kills a Marine or a Marine gets injured by somebody, bets are off, man. Like, all bets are off for me.
Yeah. And then you also put them in the environment of where people are acting stupid, and then the Marines go to try and wrangle control over them. The people that are acting stupid get hurt, and then they start to blame the Marines that wrangle control over them. That's a level of frustration and just general stupidity that's just going to ratchet it up for the individual Marines themselves. It was like, well, I wouldn't be here if you weren't already doing some stupid shit. So, like, I don't, like, you don't have, like, the room to complain. Like, if you don't want to be here risking getting hurt, stop burning cars. Go home.
I did find this one piece out here too. This is very interesting. If anybody is out there that's really hard up,
dude, I'm about to start rioting. 12K a week.
They're seeking extremely tough, brave men for a new crew. I don't know what I'm building. I don't know. I guess a crew I'm building. All right, $6,500 to $12,500 per week. Contract, no experience is required. Job title, operator.
How obvious do you have to make it with the job title of operator?
Yeah, we are forming a select team of the toughest dudes in the area. This unit will be activated only when the situation depends on it, but you get paid every week, no matter what. High pressure, high risk, no room for hesitation.
There's a mercenary posting on Craigslist.
Yeah, who do not break, panic, or fold under stress and are basically all-around kick-ass dudes.
So this sounds like somebody who's trying to play special operator and is trying to play Eric Prince. And they're trying, like, they have access to money. I don't know where, like, wherever it's coming from. But this seems like they're trying to pretend like they're playing CIA, and they're like, they're going to go out with their own little militia or PMC unit. And they're going to like foment some discord. It's like, dude, no.
Yeah. No. They're even paying relocation assistance. Possibly. and here's the wild thing about this, Mike, is you could literally recruit both sides from this. You literally can recruit both sides.
Okay. So I found, I hear me out. I think I found a new avenue for Bitcoin veterans funding. We play both sides, but we don't do anything. We just go to the gas station and hang out.
We're a bunch of badasses. We're badasses. We're tough. We won't buckle and all that kind of stuff. Oh, did we forget to mention peaceful, but not harmless kind of stuff?
You didn't say anything about actually doing anything in the job posting. It just stated our capabilities and like ability to not fold under pressure. It's like, we're not folding under pressure. We're taking your money and going home.
That's right. So if any of you guys need about $12,000 a week, apparently there's no experience required. You just got to kind of show up and maybe look the part. I don't know.
Well, like, and that, so like that touches on something too that I was going to kind of rant about in our spaces this morning, and I forgot to, which is probably for everybody else's enjoyment. But a lot of the stuff that you see in these environments, like J6, I don't think J6 is really comparable, but J6, BLM, what's going on right now in LA, a lot of the individuals that you see out there that are like dressing to impress, like going out with kit of and all kind, those aren't the guys that are actually capable of doing what they're trying to look like they're capable of doing. Right. Like the only time I've seen it was during the BLM riots. You remember that clip of where that there was like a teenage kid with a rifle and a guy walked up with a sidearm and he stowed his rifle to the side, just grabbed it. And then, ejected the round in the magazine and like told him to go home and get out. Like that's the only time I've seen somebody that's out in an environment like that with a rifle that's actually acting and positioning themselves like a former operator. Cause he didn't have full vest and everything. If I remember correctly, he had his rifle to like be able to defend himself and anybody around him, and then a hoodie. So like, I just want to make sure that like people that don't have experience with like military personnel is like a lot of the times the guys that are out there that are dressed up like they're like some sort of special forces guy, like they're not it. They're trying to pretend army.
I know enough operators in this world is you're not going to find them in fatigues most of the time. Like 99% of the time, they're just going to be wearing a baseball cap and street clothes and you're never going to know.
Yep. Just like what was it? Ivanka Trump was like walking on the street, and her Secret Service guys like came out of nowhere and jumped a guy that was like recording with camera.
Oh, dude, I did see that where he was just like, "Hey, no, thank you, go away."
It's like, you didn't know we're here because we didn't want you to know we're here, and we're very good at it. So knock it off.
Yeah, soft presence.
Yeah.
I think we have anything else on this subject.
No, it's just, I think like I said in the spaces earlier this afternoon too, is I don't think that there's really anything that if you're not living in the immediate area and you're not like looking out for the safety of like your family and yourself, like there's no need to meticulously watch this stuff. Just like check in. If you're going to do anything, like do what I do, is like check in like once or twice in an evening to see how things are, if they're escalating or if they're spreading, so you understand what's going on, and then just move on with your life and don't feed into the panic.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, Mike, is stay away from this as far as you can. Don't give it your energy. Don't give it your worry. Don't give it any of that kind of stuff. Obviously, preparation is a great thing, and you should be prepared for a summer where maybe they're going to do some of this kind of stuff in terms of escalation. But I think the American public has got the right idea for the most part. Is are they righteously angry at a lot of things that are going on? Absolutely. To bring this back to Bitcoin, this is all occurring because a fiat system allows it and needs it to occur. Bitcoin fixes a lot of this. And I say that as a guy that's sitting here for a long time that, you know, has really wanted to see things change in the United States for the better. And if we can fix the money where the incentives change to a harder system, a meritocracy system, where you can't just war your way out of problems, you literally have to fix them, and war doesn't get you any further down the road or any closer to those things. That's what Bitcoin does. So if you're new to Bitcoin and you're wondering how all this happens, man, check out bitcoinveterans.org. It's our organization. It is free for everybody. We have a mountain of guys in here, a legion of guys that are ready to help you understand every facet and go down as many rabbit holes with you as you need to go down. But fixing the money in our lifetime is what's really driving this now. And I really think, you know, that's what's driving the collapse of this empire as fast as it is. I mean, spending's got to, you know, speed up. And at the same time, as while they're speeding up spending, Bitcoin is starting to capture the imaginations of extremely wealthy traditional finance, the different state actors that are out there. And obviously, there's a big rip right now with even our, I should say, you know, some of the heroes of Bitcoin, like the sailors and the maulers out there that are looking at, you know, doing financing on your Bitcoin, which I don't necessarily agree with, but at the same time, it's like,
yeah,
there's things are happening in the space because Bitcoin is forcing their hand. If they don't start to participate in Bitcoin, at some point they're going to be irrelevant, and they're not ready to be irrelevant yet. So
yeah, and like, well, and like the, because I think the other aspect of the kind of light at the end of the tunnel that Bitcoin provides is not necessarily as a monetary unit or as an asset per se, but more like the cultural or philosophical underpinnings that happen from, say we have like our couple hundred vets that we've got, and a lot of them become, or any number of them become millionaires or whatever. What do you think happens when a not harmless but radically peaceful group of militarily trained men have financial wealth at their disposal, and like the things that they're capable of doing for like a community or a country, like that kind of thing is just like that alone, in my opinion, should be exciting. And like that's how it should be. Like, you don't want, in my opinion, you don't want like the Steve Jobses or the Jeff Bezoses or the Elon Musks accruing all the wealth of a country. Like, you want the principled, skillful, very protective members of society having the wealth, because they're going to put the money and the wealth where it needs to go instead of where they can profit most, because you're chasing profit. Like, and I'm not, that's not a position against capitalism, but it's just like any other system. You put too many resources into too many of the wrong hands, and things go sideways really bad.
Yeah, I think you're onto something, and it's actually a great segue into what we're going to be talking about here soon. The Second Renaissance, the idea that you are going to have a bunch of militarily, not only trained but guys with experience, with a load of power because of Bitcoin, because the incentive structure is such, and the name economy enters into the equation with Bitcoin, is this starts to really drive innovation and change. And it also begins to drive, I think, you know, a lot what you talk about in the beginning of your book. Let's flash it up here so everybody can see it. I'm going to drop a link here in the chat and throw it up on the screen for you guys. But you can kind of see here, this is on Amazon. Mike is now an author, and an esteemed author at that. The Second Renaissance, Reclaiming Prosperity in a Decentralized Age. You just published this, back in middle of May, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you probably would have gotten it within, I don't know, I would think 24 or 48 hours. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I think it was May 15th or May 14th. So yeah, that sounds about right.
It's an incredible book, and it begs, you know, that question, and it talks about it in the very beginning in terms of identifying problems, right? As one of the giant problems that we have in this day and age is we lack a masculine, an understanding of masculinity from a positive point of view, because we've had this, you know, woke feminism run awry to a certain point where it's, you know, been weaponized against all males, right? Like, it, unless you're some soy boy, white knight, piece of shit, right? Like, but you really lined out that chapter extremely well, and I don't remember off the top of my head which one it was. I think it may have been 4, but in terms of this woke feminism that's been used against us and really been used to deride, you know, young males, and even, you know, the whole spectrum of male progression into, you know, like your apprenticeships, your journeyman, and then into your master's, right? As we've gone down this, you know, fateful, you know, revolution that we have in this progressive hellscape that we're coming out of right now, You really pointed that as one of the key problems in terms of fiat money. And I'd love for you to go into it a little bit.
Well, like, so I actually, and I kind of did us a disservice, or maybe I didn't. I just recently spoke with Joey of the Canadian Bitcoiner podcast on Twitter. We did a live stream where I was so heavily caffeinated going into this because I was so tired, because for those of you that don't know, I just became a dad 2 weeks ago. And I was waking up at like 4.
Dad and author within a month, man. That's amazing.
Yeah. But waking up at like 4 a.m, staying up and getting stuff done around the house while mom's trying to sleep and rest up. And, I think we spoke at like 8 o'clock at night. So like I was probably on like my fifth cup of coffee within like 6 hours at that point. I actually ended up getting sick because I consumed so much caffeine. I was so dehydrated that day that I thought my heart was going to explode out of my chest. And that's the first time I've ever done that. And that's like going on deployment, being in a desert environment, 130 degrees, and drinking Monsters and pre-workout all day. And I still never hit that limit. But anyway, so the problem with masculinity is like it's extremely multi-pronged. It's a flywheel that has a number of different inputs, right? So like you just mentioned like the feminism angle, which is very cultural, philosophical, psychological, and corporate, right? Because like there's the DEI aspect of like specifically choosing not to hire men, and in the last couple of years, white men in particular, which I don't know if you guys have looked around the U.S., but the majority of men in the U.S. are white men. When you have environments where the females are being led to believe that masculinity in general, and it's all facet of masculinity, right? Like it didn't start this way, but it kind of came to a crescendo in the last couple of years of anything that men try to do to better themselves or to establish themselves is a net negative. There was no adherence for understanding that men need their own spaces, just like women need their own spaces, because men have to develop each other, right? Because like, if we don't have like dojos, as just like an example, if we don't have dojos of where the men with the boys with the thin skin, or the boys and the men with the insecurities come in and try to prove themselves and get smacked in the face and thrown into the dirt, if they don't like get humbled and kind of put in their place, they become nuisances to the rest of the community in the country. That's just one example. When you have those men that aren't getting that dojo experience, and then they also cannot get employment, then you run into another problem of where they're just growing more and more frustrated. They're blaming the rest of the system, and they're adopting a victimist strategy. And then you also throw in the fact that like those two aspects make those men very undesirable mates for women. And so those guys can't get mates. Then you have an extremely sexually frustrated male environment that has very thin skin and are very insecure. Like that's not a recipe
down for the worst type of society.
Yeah, that's not a recipe for success. We'll just put it that way. And then you like, so those are just like the underpinnings. But then we're also not. What I also kind of tried to touch on with the structure of the book too, is that there's also a nutritional aspect. So starting, what was it? Probably in the 80s, I think, 80s, 70s or 80s. Funny thing is like this all comes downstream of the Nixon era and breaking of the gold window with the dollar. And just as soon as the dollar became backed by itself, like all these problems just like sprung up like weeds. What I'm leading us to is that the nutritional aspect of you started getting the federal government injecting itself with the public's nutrition, of stating like that's where they started to demonize fats and glorify sugars for the sake of like the big sugar conglomerates like Kellogg and Pepsi and Coca-Cola and all those guys. What happens with that is that you have a population that radically shifts its diet, starting to get away from animal proteins, because animal proteins are basically just protein and fat. You demonize fat, which lowers the cholesterol intake for the average individual, and cholesterol is a necessary input for producing testosterone
and brain function.
And brain function, yeah. and avoiding neuropathy and like demyelinization of the neurons and everything else. But so you have an environment, you're creating an environment that's its own flywheel, because once you get the public, you get a small, like Bitcoin is a great example. You get a small subsection of the public buying into this idea or interested in this idea, it starts to kind of just churn itself, and more people get interested because those people get more and more others interested, and they talk about it and all that. Right.
That's why you think so good, buddy.
Yep, exactly. And so like there's that diet aspect, and then there's the progressive demonization of beef in the US, which is something that our friend Texas Slim has been really pounding the table about, getting the males and the females to stop eating as much red meat has also lowered the testosterone levels itself, because you can pick up some testosterone from just eating the meat itself because it's in the muscle. And then you're also reducing the protein intake, which is also going to be reducing cognitive function, immune function. And like you're going to need that protein to obviously grow your own muscle tissue, which growing muscle tissue is also going to further incentivize greater testosterone production. So you're like, you're not like, what's been happening is not just, keeping white men from getting good jobs. It's been consistently beating down the male population in the US at literally every turn. You're keeping them from getting jobs. They can't go into their dojos and get in their own like male, like manosphere to be able to develop themselves and find out where they stand, but where they want to go. They can't get the mentorship and the leadership that they want. They also, because of the economics, they can't get their own homes. So they're either stuck with roommates, which, roommates can be fine, but if they can't get roommates, then they're stuck in mom and dad's basement. And that's already,
it's emasculating to say the least.
Oh yeah. It's emasculating in every regard.
Yeah.
And then, they aren't getting like good enough nutrition, because like one thing that I also talked about in the book is that the produce that we're consuming is 1/8 the nutrient density of what it was back in the 40s. Which means that you have to eat 7 times more the amount of food in order to get the same nutrient density in like an apple or an orange. If that's true for us, it's also true for our cattle and our chickens. If it's true for our cattle and our chickens, that means we're getting even less from the meat that we're eating, because our digestive system doesn't absorb at a perfect rate. It's basically a pressure differential.
Well, then you also have to factor in, okay, if we're not getting the proper nutrients from the wholesome things that we, can eat or should eat, then what are you supplementing with? And a lot of times people are supplementing with extremely, highly manufactured foods, right? Like,
yeah.
When you do that, you're starting to see more cortisol, which you mentioned in your book, stress yep. hormone introduced. And on top of that, you're also seeing things like diabetics, come into the picture, where I think it was some pretty alarming statistics where you had over 12% of the population was diabetic. Yep. And you had another 40%+, if memory serves, that is pre-diabetic.
Yep.
So if you're literally being starved of nutrients on purpose, and then filling in the gap, spending more money to, possibly fill those in with manufactured foods that are absolutely terrible for you for a lot of reasons.
On top of that too, just one other thing is like the supplements, like our digestion, our nutrient absorption isn't perfect, like I've stated, but then that's from whole foods. And when you get into the processed stuff, you have a variable that's called bioavailability, which if you're having the processed stuff, the uptake goes down even greater. So like it's not a winning environment. There's no perfect solution here.
Yeah. And just so everybody knows, Mike isn't just flippantly talking about this in his book. Mike has studied health and nutrition for a long time. We're talking about his book, The Second Renaissance. And, one of the first things I ever knew Mike through was Clubhouse, and then the early spaces out there. And this was his wheelhouse. You know, it was one of those things where if something came up in terms of health, Mike was, you know, Johnny on the spot with this kind of stuff. So the first few chapters is especially outlining you know, nutrition and the bioavailability of nutrients and really the starter, you know, where this all comes from in terms of our methods of agriculture in this fiat age. Really stems. I wanted to, before we get into that side, I wanted to kind of take a minute and really kind of talk to what you were saying about, you know, dojos and guys and training and martial arts. And that's something obviously, you know, near and dear to me and my family, right? Is we got an entire, you got an entire family that loves, to go to the gym and get after it together and jujitsu. And, you know, what that affords, I can't speak highly enough of the martial art in general. I don't care what martial art you do, but jiu-jitsu is one of those where if you really want to, you know, go and find a great gym, a family gym or something like that, where you can take your sons and daughter and wife and train, obviously be careful because not all gyms are created equal. And there's some real shitheads out there in this space that are predatory, but there are also some great places. And what you're doing in that, time and space is you're also establishing a natural hierarchy that you mentioned in your book, right? This natural hierarchy is, you know, there's a lot of bloviating about alpha males and all that kind of stuff in society. And I will tell you, you know, you can find gyms with that kind of shit too. I highly suggest you find, you know, the humble warriors to learn from. And when you do, what you'll find is the guys who are the alphas don't have to say anything. They don't have to, they're not talking about alphas. They're not talking about betas and cucks and, you know, all this other, maybe in behind closed doors, but not out in front of everybody.
Yeah.
You
know, the Myron Gaineses are not alphas.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, there's this natural pecking order that you start to see where, it sets things, I believe, in the correct lens for young men, especially to see. And when you come in and you are a spaz, right? Whether you're a young white belt or an old white belt, or it doesn't matter. When you're new and you don't understand, it's the hardest part, right? Is there's kind of this feeling out period where a lot of people will quit. But the ones who get through it, you know, get to the other side, and hopefully they've got mentors that are telling them, hey, listen, you know, your job right now isn't to submit people. Your job right now isn't even to escape. Like, your job right now is just survival. And once you start to get to a certain point, then we'll start worrying about escapes. Then we'll start worrying about possibly, you know, doing some passes and going on the offense. But what it does is it kind of sets up this, you know, this hierarchy where they can see it, where they have, you know, guys who have been at it longer, who have put in more effort, that maybe have some more natural talent or strength or whatever the case. But then there's also always somebody better than that, and always somebody better than that. And even, you know, the old guys, like, right? I'm talking, you know, guys who are, you know, 50 plus years in, their coral belts, you know, they are extremely well respected. Could some of the black belts and maybe even some of the, you know, wound up purple belts beat those coral belts? Of course they can, but they don't dare go out there and show their ass in front of the school trying to embarrass or, you know, quote unquote, win against somebody like this, because this guy has earned everybody's respect around there. Because at one point, this guy could take everybody's life, or this, you know, like it's one of those things where these kids start to see humility. They start to see their ability to progress, and they start to understand a bigger world than this, like, fight or flight. They're beginning to see how to think through their issues and become, you know, master chess players on a chessboard that's always moving, which is very similar to life.
Yeah. Well, and they see like second, third, fourth, and fifth order effects of, like, their decisions. Is kind of what you're getting at too. Cause, like, if they were to just spaz out and try and fight the village, it's effectively the village elder, that's established himself as both the warrior and the elder and the source of wisdom. If you're going to spaz out, even if you do beat him, like, you're not going to win. Because like, 'cause then you like you lose the respect of the entire community and you humiliate yourself in a way that they couldn't have pictured before. They would have thought they're like, oh, I'm gonna beat the best, strongest, most skilled guy here, and like I'm gonna be like the big man on campus. It's like, no, everybody's gonna turn on you.
Yeah, you've upset the apple cart in the village, right?
And like, you can't like you don't get that kind of exposure unless you're thrust into like that. And it's effectively a male environment. 'Cause like my dojo effectively was growing up in the Pipefitters Union. 'Cause it was a similar kind of space. I was the scrawny kid that my dad was well known in the space, but like I came in with like trying to prove that I'm smarter than everybody. And that's really no different. Like then you get humiliated and then like you get proven that you're also weak and like all this, it's like, okay, well, I should probably just shut my mouth and work a little hard, and I'll gain my respect that way, you know?
Yeah, it's there's something to be said for, managing emotions as well. Yeah, in this society of outrage where I don't know, you've got every purple haired wildebeest that, can't help themselves. And some guys, some guys as well will yell into their phone, right? Like they'll yell into their phone and then they'll post it on social media and the entire world can see how out of control they are with their own emotions and their own mindset and their own OODA loop. And I think this return to masculinity that you've outlined, right? Because of Bitcoin and what Bitcoin provides in terms of the incentive structure and the environment for these type of things really goes a long way toward taking this up and down type of emotional mentality and really kind of, streamlining it to this beautiful, like you're very even, you're very stoic, you're very present, in other words. And being present and being able to put energy into the current moment versus the past, which does you no good, or the future, which, I mean, you can prep for, but you're always living in the present. That ability to stabilize your presence in any crowd, in any group, in any situation, that is what America needs more than ever right now.
And like that's also why I tweeted out earlier today that Bitcoin veterans tend to be the calmest people in the room, because we have the dojo experience and then the financial stoicism of the Bitcoin assets. So it's like, as long as you don't mess with me, I don't care. Like, I don't have to care. Like, stay off my lawn, stay out of my neighborhood. Don't jack with my source of food and my comfort and like the safety of my family. And like, we won't have a problem, right?
Yeah, man. Let's get into a little bit of the diagnosing of the problems. We kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, down to the soil. I know Texas Slim has had a lot of influence on you in this regard. And the Beef Initiative, if you guys don't know who Texas Slim is, he runs the Beef Initiative. Extremely charismatic guy that really cares about where we're sourcing our food, how we're sourcing our food, and how we're maintaining our land, because that's where a lot of the issues start. So if you want to kind of dive into that for us a little bit.
Yeah, so this is going to continue to be downstream of what we were talking about with the masculinity issues and following like the health problems. So we already touched on the fact that all of our food essentially is not as nutrient dense as it was a couple decades ago. And you have to ask, well, why is that? Right? Because and this is also one of the reasons why I wrote these sections for this book, is that a lot of the problems that are kind of mainstream now that weren't mainstream a couple years ago, they're still very surface level. Like the diet is still very surface level. Like you can only do so much with the diet when you have to increase the volume of the produce that you're eating, because the produce isn't as dense as it was before, or how it's supposed to be. So if our food is one eighth the nutrient density of what it's supposed to be, that means that our soil is terribly destroyed. Some of the one of the my favorite statistics, which is, I mean, maybe it shouldn't be favorite, maybe it's the least favorite statistics, is that here in Iowa, 30% of our topsoil has been eroded, and it's gone down the Mississippi and ended up in the Gulf of Mexico or whatever. And then what's left is a problem of industry here in the U.S. So I don't know if there's a single person in America that doesn't know what like a cornfield is going to look like, or a combine. And one of the problems with, and that like that particular type of farming, the farming that we all know and are comfortable with right now, is called industrialized monocropping. Thanks, Jesus. Love you too. that's pretty funny. I didn't see that comment. But one of the farming that we all know that's got the big pieces of machinery that are going through the farms at night and that you've seen in the movies like Interstellar, the combines, that's called industrialized monocropping. And you break the word down, industrialized, big industrial equipment, monocropping, one single crop across the entire field. What that is doing is it's sapping the nutrients for that specific crop and then leaving behind what could be nutrients for another crop, but is being basically determined as waste because they're just going to replant the next year, the next season. So that is filling the soil with a lot of just junk. And because it's filling it with junk for the specific crop we're trying to grow, it's requiring the farmers to drop more and more fertilizer on the fields. And just like with the problem with our nutrient absorption, you're going to notice a lot of parallels and similarities between all these different systems. Is nutrient absorption and saturation in the soil is just like it is in our bodies. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect. So like when we drop a 100% mixture of fertilizer on our soil, at best 50% of it is staying. The rest of it's getting washed away in the water table through the, like the rains and everything else, or like the farmers watering their fields. And you have to think about what happens with all that extra nitrogen, which fertilizers are primarily nitrates. What happens with all that nitrogen that gets put into the rivers and the streams? You get algae blooms. You get just all sorts of ecosystem disruption. And then that makes its way down in the Gulf of Mexico. That screws up ecosystems down there, screws up fishing. And then a lot of times those fertilizers make their way into the food through other produce and like fish and cattle that feed on these areas where the fertilizer finds itself. And then we get right around to consuming it, which, you know, is not great. And then, but then there's also another aspect of the actual industrialized farming itself where the term tillage comes into play. So tilling is a breaking up of the surface tension, like the roots and like the grass and like just everything that's on the surface level. It's breaking it up. It makes it easier to plant new seeds in the soil. But what you're doing is you're destroying the system that's keeping like basically the skin of the earth together and homogeneous. And when you do that, when you expose the soil underneath, it's very, I want to do Texas Slim credit here. There's a difference between dirt and soil. Mm-hmm. So dirt's the brown stuff that's dry, it's crumbly, and it's everything else. But soil is actually it's damp, it's wet, it's dark, it's very dense. Soil is biologically active, and so like when you're breaking up the surface tension, the skin of the earth, you're turning the soil into dirt because you're exposing the soft underbelly to the extreme conditions of the environment, like the air, which will dry it out, which, I mean, you guys have gotten plenty of cuts. Like when you get like the tissue underneath your skin dried out, it starts to crack. It's not the same as what it's supposed to be. And then you're also exposing that white soft underbelly to aspects of like heat. When the soil gets to like 90 degree temperature, biological activity just stops. It kills everything. It sterilizes the soil, turning it into dirt. So, and it's also important to also like mention that the biological activity that's going on in underneath the surface of the soil, where all that darkness and that richness is coming from, is a very complex biome, just like the biome inside your gut, that is breaking down like different minerals and different different compounds into very simple molecular structures, like breaking down like the actual like mineral version of nitrogen, which is coming from the fertilizers, into something that the crops can use.
Right.
So like when we're doing this industrialized monocropping, we're basically destroying absolutely everything about our land in order to get a quick yield out of like our crops and everything that we're trying to use to not only feed ourselves and our kids, but we're also feeding our livestock. And we're basically band-aiding an entire system, and it's just it makes itself worse with each successive year.
Yeah, you know, when you get into this, I really love the discussion on soil. It's so fascinating. I think a lot of people have been led to believe through, you know, indoctrination and science, you know, studies out there, that soil is one of those things that's not really something that they're too interested in. What to me, it's amazing. Obviously, I live in this, you know, primeval forest out here in the Appalachians, which I think is incredible. And the soil it here isn't real deep, but it's ancient. And when you start to look at, you know, what is it that, you know, makes this place the way it is in terms of its plant life and its biology, you know, its interactions between the plants and the animals, you have to really strip it down and kind of see how this all works together. And you mentioned in your book, it breaks down the mycelium network that's in the ground, right? And that mycelium network is very responsible for literally sending signals and moving nutrients through root systems and different, you know, things like worms that are in the soil. And people, you know, they've never been taught these things. They've never been taught how this underground system of mycelium works. And if you're starting to drag, you know, plows and tillers and things through soil, you're literally cutting a network. You know, the network effect of what that mycelium provides to that environment. You're cutting it into hundreds of thousands of pieces, if not millions and millions of pieces, right? And that's one of those things that doesn't just restore overnight. You've got to have cattle, ruminant types of animals that are going to eat, if there's anything that grows from these fields or the dam, and they have to defecate on it, and this has to happen for months and months and months, if not, you know, longer, depending on how stripped out the soil is. And it's one of these compounding things where if we don't pay attention to this and we don't start to fix it, then, you know, when this fiat bubble does implode and they don't have the money to put into, you know, things like nitrogen rich fertilizers to put on these fields, what do you think you're going to get out of the fields? You're going to get nothing.
Well, and you can, to your point, you can only put so many nitrogen rich fertilizers on the fields before it doesn't uptake anything.
Yeah.
Right. Because eventually you just get to like a situation that's like Idiocracy, where they're dumping the Gatorade on the crops to where there's just like, it's effectively just 100% fertilizer and no soil. And then like nothing's going to grow. Then you get your own dust bowl at that point.
Yeah, exactly right. Are you a fan of Clarkson's Farm at all? Have you ever seen it, watched it?
I've heard of it. I don't know.
I think you'd really enjoy it. You know, that's entertaining television for me and my wife these days, a couple of, middle-aged homesteaders. But I think the Bitcoin crowd, if you haven't seen Clarkson's Farm, I think a lot of people would really enjoy it. It's putting farming in the forefront, especially in the UK. It's the season before this one, they're on season four now, but they were talking about how you can, you know, it's very hard to farm, right? Like, you either go big or go broke, I think is one of the quotes in your book. If you're trying to farm at a industrial size scale, the amount of fertilizer that, you know, people are buying and putting on fields is astronomical. I mean, you look at it and you're just like, oh my gosh, like this is incredible. They're returning to regenerative type of agriculture, where they will have, and they document this in Clarkson's Farm in season three, where, you know, they have some trial fields where they're actually spending, you know, much, much less on things like the fertilizer and the pesticides and the herbicides. And they're doing this in a more natural way. And they're not only breaking even, they're saving money. They may not have the yield that they initially had with all the, you know, the fertilizer, right? But
yep,
your yield is more nutrient dense. The soil is, you know, able to bear the brunt of this on a rotation. And now you're starting to not do monocropping, you're doing like sister plants, right? Where,
yep,
you know, corn and beans and, you know, whether they call it the three sisters or whatever, things like that, where you have the right plants that are there to not only support each other, but also support the soil at the same time by putting nitrogen back into the soil naturally. And that's something that I can't wait to see things like this, you know, coming back to fruition.
Yeah. Well, and like the other cool thing too, is like with the regenerative agriculture stuff, is that it's not just the crop rotation. It's also making sure you design like a hedgerow and like a tree line that will support it'll support the aspects of the ecosystem, like specific bugs or birds that will eat the pests that become problems for the crops themselves. So you have a giant, and this is something Mel, like I love mentioning, because I always bring it up here at the houses, but it's a complex adaptive system. Like there's once you get it to the point of where it's basically managing itself, and then you're just changing which crops are in the rotation, to the point of where like you're literally the cool thing is that once you get on a cycle like this, then like regenerative farmers, they just like have to coordinate with their neighbors, to where one neighbor, it's like this is their crop season, so then for them it's like their soybean season, and the next one is like the next one, so it's like the yield just hops down the line as far as like in the environment, and everybody's supporting everybody else.
Yeah, much healthier way about farming. And it's, boy, to get big ag back out of farming and start doing, you know, what farmers do best, right, is taking care of the land and being, yeah, conservationist, where this is nature healing. And, you know, this is one of the things where, you know, Bitcoin helps us get to that point, right, is you go into it in your book, and I don't know if you want to save some of this for the reader or not, but you know, this is something that over time, you know, Bitcoin begins to fix, because we have to be smarter, we have to be more intentional, and we can't just be extremely wasteful with a finite resource.
Yeah, well, and like the gist of it is that with like a fiat currency, it allows you to avoid actual reality, right? Because you're printing a worthless piece of paper out of nothing and demanding that people use that as a form of a exchange for goods and services, and that can only last for so long, and then eventually the rest of the world is going to be like, okay, this isn't real, so what are we going to use now? Because like I don't want your Chuck E. Cheese tokens anymore. Like, you need to give me something that I can actually use.
Well, yeah. I mean, we talk about, you know, a lot of times in this world where eventually the energy rich nations are no longer going to take the dollar. You know, at some point in a lot of places around the world, they're not taking American food either, because it's such trash.
Yeah. And that's all downstream of the fiat currency. Like the soil is trash, the farming's trash, the food is trash, the policies are trash. Like I think like that kind of touches on like the topic that we were on earlier, is that like there's a lot of fight that's looking for a front right now. And yeah, I think people need to realize that the front is moving digital, and you might as well put some of your fight into something like Bitcoin rather than go out and get involved with what's going on the streets. It's not going to change anything.
It's so easy to, golly. I mean, I guess we'll kind of shift gears a little bit. Is there anything else you want to get into in terms of this?
No, because like if you keep asking me questions, I'm basically going to talk about the whole book, and then nobody has any justification to actually go out and buy it. And I do want people to buy it.
Go out. Mike has put a ton of work into this. The Second Renaissance, you can find it on Amazon. The link is in the show notes, and I will make sure that it is widely broadcast tonight and after the show and all that fun stuff. But there's been some things obviously happening since last we have met. I did get to go out to Vegas for the stablecoin convention.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, man, I got to tell you, I wasn't going to go to Vegas. I had to go to Vegas for work, and it was exactly what I thought it was going to be. So for those of you guys that don't know, I was in the MIC industry for a while, and I had to go to Vegas every year for the SHOT Show, which is at the Venetian and the Palazzo. And it's the same convention center and all the same bullshit, right? It's just same bullshit, different day. It's Vegas is, in my heart, Vegas is one of the most fiat places on earth. And
it's a cesspool.
Yeah. To go from Nashville to Vegas the way that they did, I got to tell you.
Is it jarring?
It's awful. It was last year, you know, this organization, Bitcoin Veterans, did some really amazing work. And when we heard the announcement was going to be Vegas, everybody's like, fuck that. What are we doing? Unfortunately,
Put it back in Nashville so we can go work with Dust Off Dan again.
Yeah. In 2026, it's going to be there again. Unless I have to go for work or something, I don't plan on being there. So, I don't need a debrief. I think there's been plenty said about how jarring, how awful, how stablecoin, crypto, TradFi suit like Vegas was. But it did, you know, kind of spur something inside of me and some of the other Bitcoin veterans that were there, that were hanging out in a nice cigar lounge, having a bourbon. I got to tell you, Brett, if you're out there and listening, man, like, great find. If you guys know Brett G, man, Brett G is the man, and he likes a good cigar, as do I once in a while. And he found this spot where you couldn't even begin to think that this was Vegas. It was amazing.
Oh, nice.
A little cigar
oasis.
Yeah, man, it was this oasis. We got to get in there and talk, and we started talking about kind of debriefing this trip and like next time around. There's obviously a lot going on with Bitcoin veterans, so much that I can barely even keep up these days. We've got Bitcoin Alaska that's coming. There's a daily show that happens at 10 a.m. on Spaces every day. I check out all of those things. And if you haven't got your tickets for Bitcoin Alaska, there's still spots up there. And I know those guys would love to have you. I will not be in Alaska. There's now, we are moving in another direction to get the band back together in Nashville. And this is something that I think, I would like to continue. We are working with Bitcoin Park. Rod and the guys over there have been extremely gracious. We're going to be working with them once a month, once a quarter, in DC, in Nashville, and in Austin. These guys have given us basically the keys to Bitcoin Park, and all we have to do is coordinate through them. So we are coordinating right now another telehash, and props to Big Nick and Montani and the rest of the guys out there, Gabe, that organized the telehash this time around. These guys were extremely successful in pointing hash rate towards a great cause for Memorial Day. And if you don't understand the words that are coming out of my mouth, allow me to explain. In Bitcoin mining, when you mine, you can dedicate the computing power that your miners will use energy for and push them towards a centralized pool if you choose. And that's what these guys did. I think they came up with about 109 petahash at peak, which is extremely impressive.
I did not know that.
Yeah, man. And I definitely wanted to give these guys all the kudos that they deserve on this. This is they've learned some valuable lessons, and what we are going to do is not only recreate that, but we're also going to, I think, recreate what we did for Bitcoin Park in 2024 for the shooting range. We are going to have an event, it sounds like, at Bitcoin Park for Veterans Day. I believe that's going to be the week before the 10th. And let me just see if I can't get those dates. This is not in stone yet. This is all pre-planning, But if you're making plans for this fall, that would probably be like November 6th, 7th, 5th, 6th, 7th, maybe 8th, 9th, into that weekend. I don't know. But that's when we're looking at it, is doing it the week prior to Veterans Day, which is on the 11th of November this year.
I will be making it for that one. Just yeah. So everybody knows.
I would like to rent, if we can, the same house. I would like to have other houses in that area filled. And I would like this to be a big Bitcoin Veterans family event. We've already started talking about this. And for us, you know, coming together, being together, fellowshipping, teaching each other, and learning from each other, and spreading that into the Bitcoin ecosystem, I think is one of the best proofs of work that we can possibly give, considering our skill set and our network effect. And thank God for the guys over at Bitcoin Park and the amazing things that they do, both Rod and Odell, you know, and the rest of the people out there that sponsor this. This is something that is going to be a great symbiotic relationship where we get to give as much as we can in that short time to each other and serve each other. So I'm extremely excited about it.
Yeah, dude. Like when you guys shared that update, I was like, I didn't even know I don't know if that was a point of conversation that I had missed or what, but like that was probably one of the best surprises I've had for our organization, like since we made the actual Bitcoin Veterans. Besides, like the only other surprise would have been like how many guys showed up as far as like wanting to be a part of us. Like so there's starting Bitcoin Veterans, and then there's Bitcoin Park being so gracious and giving us some space to coordinate and collaborate with them. Like this, I'm and plus I just love Nashville, so it gives me even more reason and capability to go back.
It does seem a little more homey than Nashville. I will say that, you know, there's a better connection with the community. There's a better connection, I think, with nature. There's definitely a better connection with Bitcoiners in general. It seems, and not only just Bitcoiners, but Bitcoiners families. And I think that's, you know, if you're missing that for the TradFi suit politicians in Vegas, I guess that's your choice. And you know, that's the thing, is Bitcoin's open to everybody, and Bitcoin is, you know, you use it how you like to use it and whatever, and we'll do it our way. And I guess, you know, we'll see who bears, you know, bigger, better fruit. But this is something I'm super,
our way's better. I'm just saying that.
I'm super excited about this, man. When we started talking about it, I was like, yeah, you know, we're in desperate need of a good get together this time, because that debacle in Vegas was just,
that conference was not it. Nah. It was never gonna be it. Like as soon as we found out, like you said, we're just like, no,
we're good.
It's not it's not even I'll try to make it. It's like, no, I do not want to be in that nexus of rot and filth. No, thank you.
Yeah, and I think that speaks a lot, right? Is, you know, if that was, you know, I know plenty of Bitcoin veterans showed up out there. They had a good time, and you know, for some of the guys, especially on the West Coast, it is extremely hard to get as far east as Nashville. I totally understand that. If anybody's looking at doing something on the West Coast, Wade, I'm not picking on you in Alaska. That's, you know, it's one of those places where I would love to be able to go and do things. But if anybody's looking to do something on the West Coast, possibly more like Nashville, I'd be very interested to see what maybe you think, because there are plenty of places out in you know, the desert, not necessarily Vegas, but there are plenty of really beautiful places that, you know, people can congregate, get together, whether it's out in the mountains or the desert or something like that, where I think Bitcoin Veterans would be a great, I don't know, focal point for people to meet around.
Yeah. If we don't have to keep it to mountains either, it can be really anywhere, as long as we can get guys there.
Yeah. Make it affordable, make it somewhat, you know, I say residential, like just let's try to keep it out of the bigger, you know, the bigger cities, right? Is like, if it's going to be affordable, you know, I don't know exactly what comes to mind. I'm not an expert on the West Coast or anything west of the Rockies, or even in the Rockies for that matter, but you know, make it a place where we can get together, where there's nature, where there's places where we can get out into nature, where families are welcome, and that is probably fairly affordable. And I think we could make something big happen for the West Coast guys too, because I know, trust me, East Coast is hard. I know also, though, that Nashville is within about 6 hours of almost 90% of the U.S. population, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. It makes it a lot easier. That was kind of my big announcement from that, and the takeaways from, you know, the whole Vegas thing. You know, there's some good things that are happening, and there are some great people in Bitcoin that continue to show up year after year, that continue to be stoic about, you know, which way some of this stuff is going. And I was extremely encouraged by the number of people within the Bitcoin, especially the OGs, who were like, man, this is the year of the suits. I dude, the first day I walked in, I was like, oh my God, look at all these dudes in ties and jackets and bullshit. Like, you could literally, like, them and them and them and them. And I'm not saying you can't wear ties and jackets, but I'm just going to tell you guys, if you're new to Bitcoin and you're coming into Bitcoin, you are.
It's not really the thing.
That ain't the thing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, I started back in, I think my first conference was 21, and there weren't suits. Like, even the billionaire guys, like the Max Kaiser and the rest of them, it's like everybody's wearing, like, at best a button up T-shirt. At most, it's usually a hoodie.
Yeah, yeah. No, Max is still not wearing suits and ties. I passed him a couple of times in the hallway, and I was just like, yep, there's Max. You know, he's still wearing around his Bitcoin beach stuff. But yeah, I think the tolerance for that kind of stuff was at the right levels, right? Like, extremely low. Whereas, you know, in years past, we haven't had to deal with that much nonsense. It used to be the crypto bros, which are significantly reduced. They are still running around a little bit, but, you know, everybody can spot them from a mile
away. They will be forever. Like, there's no stopping them. So,
but I appreciate Bitcoin Magazine that hooked a bunch of veterans up with a lot of free tickets. So, you know,
yeah, like, we might not have liked the conference, but we can still like the people that are there.
Yeah, well, you can, and you know, those guys gave Mike a good start, obviously, with writing articles and everything like that, and they have done a great service of putting out great Bitcoin pieces, and I hope that they will kind of recognize that at some point, and maybe, you know, shift backwards towards a forgotten era that they used to be in.
Yeah, we'll see. I got an email for a free GA ticket in the Hong Kong conference, and I'm like, what? No, like, don't email me about Hong Kong.
I'm not going to Hong Kong. No. I wouldn't mind going over to Europe, and I definitely wouldn't mind possibly going down. What is it? Is Hong Kong Asia? Is that the BTC Asia? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Hong Kong isn't my spot either, I don't think, man. Where they used to say something about flying rubber dog vomit in and out of, you know, there is a, I don't know, whatever.
I don't know what that one is.
that's an old reference to an old movie, but man, we're wrapping up here. It's about 8:24. Mike, any parting thoughts, anything you got to get out and let us know about?
No, just that for those of you that have bought copies of the book, including you, Shane, I appreciate all of you. And I have to admit that I am surprised every time that somebody tells me that they are enjoying it, because as a creator, I have a perfectionism to a fault. So I never think that anything's actually done. So when you guys do tell me that you enjoy it, I genuinely appreciate it. It's not like a copy pasta response. It's just like, oh, thanks, man. It's like, no, I do genuinely appreciate it, because I will read through it and I'll like temporarily think like, okay, yeah, I can see why people are enjoying it. I think this is actually good. But then I like, it's like that washes away after 30 seconds. And I think that I didn't do good enough. So I appreciate all you guys.
That's awesome. And for anybody that wants to listen to the book, we are working on that. Mike has been so gracious as to allow me to.
You say we, and it's really you, like, you're working on it and you're burning through it at a rate that I was not prepared for. So like, it's exciting.
Well, I'm excited to do it. To be able to lend a voice to, you know, Mike's book here, The Second Renaissance, is it's a pleasure. It's I'm humbled to be able to do it. And I got to tell you, you know, in terms of doing a narration, which I really haven't done, it's a lot of fun. It's interesting to kind of see this process come together and put together tracks and to, you know, kind of refine a new skill, so to speak. And I'm enjoying the hell out of it. So hopefully within the next week or so, I'll have this thing wrapped up and we can figure out
how to actually put it up on audiobook.
Yeah, I was gonna say, we'll have to figure out how to put this thing all together so that it makes sense and you guys can click through chapters and all that kind of stuff and buy it through you know, whatever way you like to digest audiobooks. So it's gonna be good. Let's see. Bitcoin Alaska. I should definitely pull this up before we go. Bitcoin. Boy, if I could see.
By the way, just as an Easter egg, while everybody's doing that, that image of the cover. For those of you who don't know, the Bitcoin B was transposed over is the gates of paradise. So I tried to include some symbolism in the very simple book cover.
So wait a second. Tell me that again.
So when you're looking at like the cover itself, I like that it's a lot harder to see on the physical cover. You can see it in the image of the Amazon page, but there's a Bitcoin B over the shoulder of the it's a big giant Bitcoin B over like behind the statue of David.
Oh.
And the image that it's overlaying is the actual physical Gates of Paradise monument.
I did not know that. Tell me about the Gates of Paradise monument.
That's like, it's just the Gates of Paradise. So I wanted something that was like a little like symbolic to like the whole second Renaissance thing. It's like, we're going to fight big Goliath as David with the Bitcoin, like the Bitcoin asset. And then behind Bitcoin through Bitcoin is like the Gates to Paradise.
Awesome. I love it, man. I mean, there's the eye of the creator. There's so many little things and Easter eggs and all that kind of fun stuff that gets baked in. Like, great. Let me plug these guys, bitcoinalaska.org. This is a Bitcoin veterans. This is the first Bitcoin veterans conference. Shout out to our guy, Wade, who's been just tirelessly putting the work into not only putting this together, but getting speakers and people to come up here, the lodging, the info, the side events, and everything else that he's done, man, just a huge effort. If you have the time and the opportunity to get up to Juneau, this is going to be July 1st through the 6th. Everything that you need is on the website. It's bitcoinalaska.org. And I guarantee you, you're probably going to meet friends and have the time of your life. I mean, look at all these people that are going to be there. Dom Bay, Lisa is going to be there. Looks like Rustin. I got to talk to Rustin a lot during the conference, which is always good to catch up with some of our other Bitcoin veterans. And man, just a phenomenal group of people are going to be there. All-star cast. You got Whale Pass is only $800. I know. And Mountain Pass for $150. So easy thing. Lots of people are coming up with their families. So if you have a family, you want to bring them up, bring them up. It's going to be, I think, just a fantastic event. And I'm absolutely, I don't know, sad that I'm going to have to miss it. I've got a birthday in the family during that time. And that's my son turning 14. So,
yeah. And I'm going to be dadding. So it's like, I'm looking forward to being a part of the one next year. Yeah. Cause like, I really feel like it, I'm really bad at expressing emotions, but, I really do feel very, very bad that I cannot be in Juneau for this event for Wade. Cause I want to go to Alaska. I've never been to Alaska.
Same.
I've heard Alaska's fantastic during the summer and I would like to find out myself. But then also just the fact of going to Alaska, because I like doing things that most people haven't done, and being able to show up for a Bitcoin veteran who's like, the quality of the website should tell you what you can expect for the quality of the conference itself. Cause that website is immaculate.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, dude, I feel so bad that I can't be there.
We should tell you, if you have the opportunity, go Bitcoin Alaska. It's Juneau, Alaska, July 1st through the 6th. And it's going to be something special. But I guess, man, we're going to be back. I'm not traveling for the next couple of weeks. So if you got time to do this again, hopefully same bat channel, same bat time, 7 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. And I'm looking forward to it. There's so much going on in the world and so much to catch up on. And, you know, whether it's talking about being dads or whatever else we're going to get into, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next week, man. This is a lot of fun. And like the fact that we haven't been able to do it for a couple weeks is like it felt like
too long.
It felt like a couple months, in all honesty.
Yeah, we need this. It's cathartic. All right, brother. Well, I will catch you guys next time. This is Bitcoin Veterans. Go check it out, bitcoinveterans.org. Get into the Signal group chats. We are here to help. It's absolutely free. There's amazing people here. It doesn't matter if you're a veteran. We will bring you in and get you started on your Bitcoin journey. Or if you have a passion within Bitcoin or want to do something that you're passionate about in Bitcoin, this is a group that's already taking action and they have all the heart and resources and skills to go out there and do it. So until next time, guys, we'll see you next week. Peace.